Welcome to Aging in Place, a podcast about the challenges of home and community-based living for seniors and people living with disabilities, and discussing the tools and solutions available to residents of the state of Washington.
My name is Julie Cope, and I have worked in the long-term care industry for about 20 years. Today in the booth is Lee and Tobiah, and in this podcast series, we're going to discuss topics related to long-term services and supports, so folks are just a bit more informed on what their options and opportunities are. So, fellas, have you heard this? The age wave is coming. So today's topic, the age wave, is sometimes referred to as the silver tsunami, and it's basically indicating that 1 in 5 U.S. residents are going to be 65 or older by the year 2030, and that 70% of these aged individuals are going to need long-term services and supports, because almost all older adults say that they want to live in their homes and get the services that they need in their communities, say, as opposed to getting help in a nursing facility or living in some other type of institution. But for many of these folks, if they're going to remain living in their home and active in their communities, these aging individuals are going to need some caregiving or some other type of long-term services and support.
Wow, Julie, that's incredible. And I'd really like to paint this picture in a little bit more detail. So we're talking about 2030, right? That's 7 years. 20% of the population is going to be at or above retirement age. And to expand upon this a little bit, the 2021 Older American Profile reports that our older population is expected to grow significantly in the future. Growth slowed a little bit in the 90s because that was 60 years after the 1930s. And because of the Great Depression, there were fewer births during that time. But as we approach that 60, 65, 70 years time period from the beginning of the baby boom, we're now seeing that portion of the population increasing dramatically. So between 2020 and 2040, the 65 and older population is projected to increase by 26%. Right now, it's about 17% of the population. By 2030, it's going to be 20%. And by 2040, it's going to be up to 22%, which means that this wave of older adults is going to be greater than the number of typically what we think of as working age adults, 18 to 64.
Right. 1 in 5 U.S. residents will be age 65 or older by 2030. The projected outnumber children by 2034, so about 10 years from now, Washington and the nation really must be ready for extreme growth of the older adult demographic who will need some type of assistance to live independently in their community. What was that statistic, Julie?
So that's about 70% of the aging population is going to need some kind of long-term service and support.
Wow, 70%. Some individuals stay in nursing homes because they are unaware of other options, as most individuals will want to live in their own homes, their own communities with their families, or even to be independent. Washington is going to have to identify and create community resources, education, opportunities, jobs, and person-centered planning to meet this public challenge. The Nation Association of Medicaid Directors is focusing 4 immediate opportunities to shift long-term care from a system that is institutionally biased towards one that is person-centered and provides home and community-based services. These opportunities include build and strengthening the workforce, assist and strengthen individuals, natural supports, promote the adoption of telehealth and assistive technology to support independent health and safety, advance person-centered outcomes and quality through innovative payment approaches. In later episodes, we will dive into this a bit more when we talk about Medicare and Medicaid and the costs associated with long-term services and supports.
So, what settings provide services and supports besides institutional settings? Do you mean like a nursing home? I know most folks are probably aware of hospital care and nursing facility care, but what does that really mean? What are the options?
Well, it actually can mean a lot of different things. So let's unpack that question a little bit and kind of reflect on what Lee was mentioning earlier, which is person-centered planning. It's really important to learn what an individual may be interested in. And ultimately, that means meeting with folks where they are. There's a belief that services and supports are only available at a time of crisis, like, say, during a medical emergency or a planned joint replacement surgery, where folks are starting to think about, you know, where am I going to get my rehab? Where can I get physical therapy? That kind of thing. But really helpful supports can be different for different people at different times. They are available prior to a planned therapy session or even before some kind of a medical emergency. They can be maybe even prevent a medical emergency. Some examples of this might be some kind of low-techy type of supports, like tools and devices that you can use in your home, like a magnifying mirror. A magnifier could help you read a medication label. A reacher can assist with grabbing items out of reach without a step stool. Other supports like medical equipment. I think most people think of wheelchairs or walkers as examples. But these are services where these devices can help with personal tasks at home. Button hooks, all kinds of really great devices that are kind of low tech and can help with preparing meals even, like an electronic can opener.
You know, these things really can be available in the settings outside the nursing home, and such as those that may be living with a family member, living in home with assistance, living in an assisted living facility, and living in adult family homes. Some of these items are out there, but they're not always accessible, and bringing these to the forefront and making them more accessible is very important. So I think that all those things, like the magnifier that you talked about, Julie, is important that we make these things more available.
Right. Just kind of talk about them, build awareness. I know no one can see me, of course, but I'm pretty short. And the grabber, the reacher, is kind of like essential for me in the kitchen. I will never be able to reach those top shelf items without it.
I've personally been dealing with this kind of thing a lot recently. Both of my parents have gone through various medical events in the last year. My father for a time was in a wheelchair, and we very suddenly had to think about things about his home that we'd never had to think about before. There was no way to get in or out of the house without going up or down steps. Many of the doorways were not wide enough for a standard wheelchair to fit through. Unfortunately, my father ended up passing away late last year, and I moved my mother in with me because she's going through health problems of her own. And like you were describing, Julie, she's a shorter woman. She literally can't even see, let alone reach the higher up shelves. So we've had to figure out accommodations for her for where she can reach things in the kitchen, how she can get to things in her bedroom and in the bathroom, where she might need things like grab bars or extra friction on the bathtub so that she doesn't slip and fall. There are literally hundreds of things that you've probably never thought of until you realized that you or somebody in your family suddenly does not have a standard adult range of mobility or of strength or various things like that.
I can totally relate to you there, Tobias. I did a work at a lady's house where I lowered all of her closet shelves so that she could reach it because she could no longer get her arms up that high. So I can feel the need for what you're talking about. And being proactive at managing medical conditions are important. Regularly getting your hearing checked or your eyes examined, and then addressing any changes with hearing or vision can maximize your ability to engage with our community. The same profile of older Americans that Tobias referenced earlier indicated that in 2020, 18% of adults age 65 and older reported that they could not function at all or had a lot of difficulty with at least one of six functioning domains. Specifically, 21% had trouble seeing, even if wearing glasses. 29% had difficulty hearing, even if wearing hearing aids. 39% had trouble with mobility, walking or climbing. 8% had difficulty with communication, understanding, or being understood by others. 28% trouble with cognition, remembering, concentrating. 8% difficult with self-care, such as washing, all over, or dressing. taking a look around your residence to identify areas to improve access, such as widening doorways, installing ramps, additional lighting, grab bars or handrails, altering hinges, and so on doors. So these are real issues that we have, and I know that it's a lot of statistics and a lot of numbers, but it's real and it's what's happening.
Right. I think a lot of home modifications can be small. They kind of fall, and these home modifications fall under the umbrella of long-term services and supports. I know, like in my home, I already have started going through the process of widening all of our doorways one at a time, because that's incremental changes that I can afford, you know, like in the moment, a little bit here, a little bit there, with the goal of by the time I'm 65, the house will be completely accessible from one end to the other. But to go back to that person-centered plan that we talked about, it's kind of important to remember that not everyone needs the same type of supports. Lee was giving some good examples about home modifications, like helpful lighting and improved safety, right? Those kinds of things. But not everybody is going to need something like a ramp. All homes are a little bit differently, are built a little bit differently, but everyone is going to need to be able to enter and exit their home, right? So think about that as you're aging, or as you're trying to help parents or grandparents who are maybe experiencing more and more limitations with mobility. How are they going to enter and exit their home independently? What can happen? What can we do to try to make this as safe for them as possible and kind of future-proof it, right? So earlier, we also talked about some low-tech supports, and there are kind of, I think the lingo is like mid-tech or middle-of-the-road technology, like using an Alexa or Google Home device. Personally, I use my Alexa for all kinds of reminders. I set alarms to help me remember what day is trash day, and I have some functions enabled with it. So for example, like at sunset, all of my smart lights will come on, so that automatically lights up the house and prevents me from tripping over my creatures. And there are also other devices similar to Alexa or like a Google Home device that will allow speech-enabled technology. I think a lot of remote controls do that now as well, where you can just speak into it and ask the TV to get to a certain channel or a certain show. So that same type of technology can work with other things as well, raising and lowering blinds, turning on and off the light, like I was just talking about. And it can help kind of maximize your engagement with your own environment, your own home, and getting around in your home and getting your needs met in your own home.
Right. My aunt in her late 70s just learned how to use Alexa for alarms, appointment reminders, and even life alert calls. So it's a great innovative technology that, you know, some older people are going to have to be help and learn how to use it, and it will make life to where they can live at home longer, like you stated, Julie.
Absolutely. I just installed a smart switch in my mother's bathroom with a humidity sensor on it, so it would remember to turn on and off the bathroom fan for her, so that she wouldn't have to do that. We also got some very cheap plug-in nightlights with photo sensors on them, so they automatically turn on when it gets dark out. And it keeps a little bit of light in the hallway so that people who are walking around at night don't trip over any animals or rugs or anything like that. So I think that just about wraps up our episode for this week. We're going to be continuing this series talking about the different kinds of public programs that are available in the state of Washington to help people who may need long-term services and supports, as well as more information about the structure, how the system works, where its funding comes from, and everything else that we think might be useful for people who could benefit from the system to know.
Our next episode is going to be on aging in place. We will describe the authorizing environment and long-term services and supports industry. And we thank you for listening, and thank you for joining us.
Aging in Place is produced by Julie Cope, Tobiah Panchin, and Lee Schuler, in conjunction with the Evergreen State College Graduate Studies Program. For additional information, citations, and show notes, please visit us on the web at capstone.panchin.net. And I think that'll do it.